Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar. When I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested. And all thumbs up. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. This is Lisa, and I am here with my Poddest Goddess BFF.
Hello, it's Tawny.
What's up, Tawny? Today, we really want to talk about a topic that is near and dear to our hearts because it's about celebrating, but it's also about being appreciative of all that has gotten us to where we are. So kind of rites of passage. And Tawny has just gone through a serious rite of passage life milestone. Tawny is a married woman. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It has truly been probably one of the craziest 6 weeks of my life. Wonderful, wonderful things have happened, and very just, it's also like a very overstimulating time, you know? So it's like within 5 weeks, I got engaged, my book came out, and then I got married. So it's been,
yes,
it's been very fast. But also like, you've known for years, like I've been ready to just go to the courthouse with Nick. You know, I've known since very early on that he was my person. And I talk about our relationship a lot in my book. And I am a published author and a wife, and it feels fucking good, Lisa.
Yeah, right.
It really does. It feels like, you know, I was not expecting there to be a big shift in where Nick and I were and getting engaged / married. I really wasn't expecting that big of a feeling shift. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it would feel any different, you know? But there's just something about looking at my ring and I'm like, wow, this person wants to spend the rest of their lives with me. Like, this person fucking loves me. And I knew he loved me. Like, there was never any doubts before, but there's just this sense of security and safety that I really didn't think I would feel.
That, yeah, it's almost going into like a, I don't know, you become part of a unit.
Yeah. And, you know, and we've lived together for 4 years, like on a day to day level, nothing has changed, you know, nothing has changed logistically. But we, you know, we just did a fun, simple courthouse wedding. We didn't want, well, A, we don't have the money to put into a fabulous wedding. And B, I don't really want one, to be honest. I just wanted to go to the courthouse and celebrate. I wanted Nick to be my husband and to go to the courthouse and like have a really wonderful day and go about the rest of our lives. And that's exactly what we did. Our dear friend, Mac, who was on a few episodes ago, she was our witness. And she pulled out all the stops. She had a lot of surprises up her sleeve. And, you know, so like we get to the courthouse. Mac is very sweet. She's documenting everything on her Instagram stories. So like I tell my friends and families, like follow Mackers NYC. If you, it'll feel like you're there, you know? And it was a very cool, modern internet friendly wedding because she was recording, like she was documenting all of it for,
I was following.
You were following it. My mom downloaded Instagram so she could follow Mac.
Yeah.
So like that was really cool. So we were able to keep it just us, just me and Nick. And if people wanted to follow along, they could. So it was really like a nice, like we set the boundary. It's going to be a private ceremony and you can see some stuff on our friends' Instagram.
Right. I love how you did that.
And then we just got a nice dinner and then we got a nice hotel for the night, did a little staycation, celebrated just us and came home.
So great.
Yeah.
So great. And I think it's really, you know, I know you and I talk about this a lot when we are, you know, just the two of us chatting offline. And, you know, there is a lot of feeling, I think everything in being present in our lives and being sober, whatever it is, just being kind of more intentional, there's a lot more ability to appreciate and be in gratitude around a lot of things. And particularly, I know for me, it feels like these kinds of life milestones just make me look back and go, I'm so grateful. I would not be here, but for, you know, being sober.
Yeah. I mean, we always say, you know, the old adage of, you know, when you quit drinking, you can live a life beyond your wildest dreams. And we say that all the time on this podcast, because it's true. Like it really is true. I never thought I would have any of the things that I have today. I honestly, right before I met Nick, I gave up on love. I gave up on dating. I was completely resigned. I was so sick of dating on the apps, dating sober. I was sick of it. I had really bad dating experiences. I just really didn't like dating. And
I remember where you were at when you met Nick.
Yes,
we had started this podcast.
Yes, we started the show and I was just like, you know what? I'm done with love. Like maybe like lovers will come and go, but like my life is about, you know, my work, being an advocate. I'm going to be like a Manhattan power suit bad bitch, you know? And I was like, it's okay if I don't find love, like it's fine. And I was even exploring like hiring a matchmaker, you know, like I was done. I was done.
Yeah.
And as you know, it's such a cliche, as soon as I made peace with being okay with myself for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. then I met my love. And these cliches are a thing for a reason. It's really, I had to go through a lot and I had to accept myself for who I am and be okay with knowing it might just be me. I had to really be okay with my company and that I found him. So,
yeah,
I just wanted to share that because obviously I care about the sober sex and dating conversation. I wrote a book about it. If you're listening and you are fed up with sober dating as well, I get it. I struggled a lot and I gave up and I kept going, you know. I really wanted to give up, but I kept going. And whether it's sober dating or family dynamics or work problems, whatever you're, you know, feeling out of, whatever feels out of control right now, just remember what you can control, you know. And like what I could control was taking care of myself. You know, I was going through a lot. I upped my therapy. I started going to AA meetings. You know, AA was not part of my story. You know, I was reaching out to you. I was calling my friends. Like I'm struggling here. So you're not alone, whatever you're struggling with. There's tons of resources out there. And just, you know, you just got to keep putting that foot, one foot in front of the other, one day at a time.
Yeah. And I think what you said is so important about needing to be good with yourself, right? Before you can be good with somebody else. I'm not going to say for somebody else. I'm going to say
with somebody else.
Because also, you know, I always, you know, catastrophize. I've talked about this on the podcast before. I tend to catastrophize. And, you know, when I catastrophize, I think about, God forbid, something happening to Craig and me being alone. And I'm like, I would have to, you know, do that. And I feel like, you know, I, God knows it's the last thing I want in the world, but you know we can do hard things and we can survive things and we can, you know, I mean, being alone is so much better than being with somebody that's not right or contorting yourself in a way that's not right. And I think when we get sober, it is harder to find people who are worth it for us, right? And when we stop, I think a lot of the frustration in sober dating can come from, you know, the fact that, yeah, you don't have to be alone, but you can lower your standards, right? You can, you know, get on an app tonight and lower your standards. But we kind of stop living that way when we get sober. And, you know, it makes us really, I think, more, at least for me, for me, it was night and day. Like, what was acceptable before I got sober and what was acceptable after? You know, it really changes. And this is a blessing. Being married is a blessing that has come along. But, you know, I know if it hadn't come along for me, I would have been okay. I would have been okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is like if you have to be okay with where you are today. Again, it's another cliche. Like if you don't get the dream job, if you know, this relationship doesn't work out, if like we can't attach our happiness to these, our happiness cannot be contingent upon these things that are out of our control. So you have to make peace with where you are today, or you really are not going to ever be happy with the wonderful things that will come your way with patience. And I'm not saying everything's going to be rainbows and sunshine, because it's fucking hard out there. We talk about this regularly, but you have to be okay with yourself at the end of the day. And I am so grateful that I found a partner, now husband, who was also okay with himself. You know, we are both in recovery. We've worked on ourselves for years before we found each other. And I didn't think I would end up with someone who was sober, but it's so great to have someone who speaks this language, who really gets it. And also, like, he prioritizes his mental health, and that is incredibly important to me. And I don't, like you said, not for someone else. That is important to him for himself. So that, and same for me. So when we come together, we come together from a place of being present and healthy, not perfect, far from perfect, but healthier, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And I think, you know, like you were saying, how you had been ready for ages for, you know, the day to just go down to City Hall and do it. You didn't make that, you know, a requirement, and you took everything as it came, like in the one day at a time thing. And, you know, being able to accept, like you said, like, it's not an external thing, like getting that piece of paper that's going to make your life great, right? Being with Nick makes your life great. And, you know, there's that, when we I was just thinking about it with these rites of passage, like marriage, like thinking, okay, now, and I did this so much when I was drinking, right? If I just don't work this job, everything will be, you know, better. I won't drink as much. I'll go to the gym all the time, whatever. If I, I'm divorced from my first husband. And, you know, I thought if I marry him, everything's going to be better. If I move out of New York, I did the full geographic, and then that's going to fix it. So all these things. And I very much looked at my drinking through a lens of, I drink this way because I'm not married. And that was such bullshit. Yeah. Such bullshit.
Like, the things we tell ourselves.
Yeah. And I really did when I was moving, I really told myself, like, okay, I'm moving and we're going to get married and I'm going to not be able to drink the way I drink alone. This is good. This will put the brakes on me. And also I'll be driving and I know I'm not going to drive when I'm drinking. So it's gonna all curb my drinking. And I did not drive while I was drinking, but I did, you know, manage to drink just as much. I just learned how to hide it from him, you know? And so, like, while we are so grateful for and celebrate all these wonderful things, like, you know, your book, like your marriage, like things, like you said, life beyond your wildest dreams, you have at the same time this knowledge of yourself that you developed and that you like, genuinely like yourself. Like, I used to wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, I hate you when I was drinking. And now I don't do that. You know, I'm not perfect, but I'm fine. You know, I don't think I'm a shitty person either. I think I'm a person who did shitty things in the past. But that doesn't make me a shitty person. And the bottom line is, like, if, you know, Craig hadn't come along, if, you know, I ended up not writing a book or whatever it was, like, I would have been okay, you know, because I learned through recovery to kind of just, like, be content with what is, right? And
that's such a good point. Sorry.
No. I was just saying, any day that my day, you know, it's the story, like I say, about the woman when I was in early recovery and I was counting days and I would go to this meeting and I'd come in at lunch and I would bitch and moan. And this woman who had like 25 years, this older grizzled woman, would just look at me and she would be like, did you drink today? And I would say, no, I didn't. And then she would say, then it's a perfect day. And you know what? She was right.
Yes. It's real. And I was thinking, like, when you said about you said something about writing the book and you'd be okay if, even if you didn't write the book, if Craig didn't come along. And I feel that way. When right before the book came out, I asked other author friends any advice for a debut author, you know, and a lot of people told me, you know, you're more than your book. Don't attach your happiness to the success of this book. And while I definitely appreciated the reminder, I am so glad that I learned that lesson already in sobriety. I learned that a thing is not going to solve my problems. Like,
that's right.
I know a lot of people will think, like, oh, once I write a book, everything will be great. My career will change and everything's going to be different. And I've been a writer long enough to know that that's just not how it works, you know?
Right.
I still have very realistic expectations for this book. I know that the average book sells 500 copies, you know, like, and that's the average book.
Yeah.
So, and I know how many copies it takes for a bestseller to happen. And I know that that's just, like, not a realistic goal. Like, if it happens, great, but, like, there's no, that can't be a goal because it's out of my control.
It's so far out of your control.
And if I attach my happiness to my Amazon ranking, then how happy can I be? Because that changes literally every minute. Like, every minute Amazon ranking will change. So I'm very grateful that I learned all of that already. But it was really interesting to me to hear these other authors telling me these really personal stories of how, like, they had to learn the hard way. Like, I expected my book to do this and this was going to happen. And I thought this would happen. And I just, to me, a successful book is a written, published book. So,
or just written, like, it's like just a piece of art you create. It doesn't even have to be published.
Like, I did the thing, you know, I'm very happy.
It's a thing you did, a thing that you made.
I wrote this book, I put an insane amount of work in it, and now it's out in the world. Hopefully it takes off. Hopefully people really love it, you know, and I can make more money from this book. But there's nothing I can do about that. I did what I could do. So, and it's the same kind of thing of like getting married didn't really change a lot of day-to-day life, right. You know? And I'm very grateful that we're not one of those couples who's like, I've been in one of those couples where I'm like, oh, if we get married, everything will get better. If I get pregnant, yes, everything will get better. Again, I've learned that the hard way, that nothing is going to get better because of like something changes like instantly.
Same.
We're in a good place. Nick and I are in a good place. You know, we take care of ourselves. There's not any surprises. And I like that. Like we didn't say vows because like we say our vows every day, you know, like we're very, you know, we're disgustingly in love. So we didn't feel the need to say our vows in a legal setting. So all that's to say is I fucking love being a married published author. It feels very
well, and you should rejoice in that and celebrate that.
It feels very adulty. I'm like, it's, yeah, I feel very like, it's like, it's hot. I'm like, I'm a wife. Like, holy shit, I want to like dress hotter. It's so funny. Like, I'm feeling
just made me put my sweats on.
I know. It's funny. People are like, oh yeah, you can like stop trying. And I'm like, no, like I want to be hotter. No. I want to be like a hot wife.
Yeah. You are a hot wife. You are most definitely a hot wife.
Well, we're both hot wives and we're both published authors. So
that's true.
I'm really just trying to catch up with you, Lisa. So I guess I need to get my, right. I need to go to law school next.
No, you really do not. You really do not. I know I'm writing. It's funny because we're talking about just like the creating art and, you know, what does it mean to get something done? I know I'm writing now fiction. I'm back in my writing workshop and I'm writing fiction. Which I have shared with you, which I love because it's just so fun to have like the guardrails off, you know, and make shit up. Like these people can do whatever I want them to. And at the same time, I have zero expectation this would ever get published. I'm not writing this because I think it would ever get published. I'm writing this because I enjoy the act of writing, being in writing, the process of it. And I have this, you know, I'm back in my writing workshop that meets once a week, your old writing workshop as well, and my old writing workshop. And I love interacting with the women in there. I love being in the mood of this thing that I love. I have no expectations tied to it. But to me, that's an accomplishment. That's a big fun. I could have never done that if I weren't sober. You know, like I said, I used to sit on a bar stool and be like, I'm going to write a book. You know, I'm going to be a writer. And
yep. It sounds like you're really finding this freedom and, you know, like you're creating this fictional world and you're getting lost in creating these characters. And it sounds like a really fun approach to writing where you're, you know, Girl Walks Out of a Bar is a very personal memoir about a very personal time in your life. So this has got to be such a different muscle that you're flexing.
Yeah, it is. And it's also like, it gives me space to think about, gee, what would it have been like if I hadn't, you know, waited until 38 to get sober, if I hadn't gone down as far as I did and that kind of stuff. So it's cathartic to me. Just the other one was, you know, Girl Walks Out of Bar was completely cathartic. That was, I needed to, like, I woke up in the morning with that thing pouring out of my chest. But you know, this gives me a different, it makes me think about different things and in a different light. And, you know, it's just been, It's just different. And I think that's why, like, we can't pin our, you know, how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about our lives and what we're doing to outcomes. It's just not, it's not only because you can't control it. It's also because trying to constantly be and reaching that outcome means we're not in the present, just having a good time doing what we're doing. Yeah, you know, if I thought about things in this story, it's like, well, will this make it more marketable? I wouldn't be writing the story.
That's such a good point. That's a really good point. So you're letting it be like, you're just letting yourself play on the page.
Yes.
And like the story is just coming out. And like, I definitely did have to think about the, who's going to consume my book, you know, because I mean, again, it's a nonfiction journalism book.
Yeah. That's
so
different.
It's like, it's very different. But I don't, now I'm thinking like, I want to have that writing experience of just playing. And I've never written fiction before. So I read fiction. I read mostly fiction now, actually. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I can't imagine writing it, but I love reading your fiction too, because it's cool to see.
Oh, that's funny.
Like I'm seeing like some real life stuff that you're pulling out and putting into
it. Yeah, sure.
Like,
oh my gosh.
Like
yeah.
I know so much about you, and I'm like, wait, this happened to her, and she's giving it to this person, and I see she changed it like this. So like that's really fun. As a close friend, you know, to see how you're playing.
Well, I'm honored that you like what I'm playing with. I'm honored that you read it. So,
oh my God, I would read anything you wrote.
Same. So, Tawny, you are on Recovery Fox. What was the music soundtrack to your getting married? What were you listening to, thinking about? What did you and Nick, you know, what was your sober themes or songs?
Our songs, we did.
Generally, were you playing a lot of vinyl? I'm thinking you played.
We always play vinyl in the house. But, you know, we stayed in a hotel room. So we listened to, I had to play, you know, White Wedding by Billy Idol.
Oh my God, yes.
While we were in the car going to the courthouse.
How did you not tell me that earlier? That's so amazing. I love it. I love it.
So we listened to a couple of those songs in the car. Our Uber driver didn't say anything. So I guess that was okay.
He had no complaints from the Uber driver.
No complaints. And then, our friend Mac, she was the witness, and when we left the courthouse, she had it all set up. Outside of the courthouse was a photographer and one of her best friends, Ryan, who he was on his guitar. He was just started serenading us outside
so
of the courthouse.
Oh, my God.
And we're dancing, and it was just like, it was really romantic. Like it was small. It was intimate. It was just us. It was just what I wanted. And then Mac, you know, she commits to the bit. We love that about her.
Oh yeah.
So she took off her jacket, and on the back of her shirt, it said, just married the Larchaks, which is our last names combined, Nick and I. And then she tied soup cans around her waist and followed us around the city while.
Oh my God, you didn't tell me this.
Yes.
This is hilarious.
So she is our just married car, and she's following us, and her friend Dylan's taking our pictures.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was fun. It was silly. It was like,
there had to be people in the city going, what the hell is going on here?
Yes.
And someone, also like loving it, because that's so unique.
Literally, someone walked by and they go, that's a good friend right there. They're pointing to Mac. And I was like, yes, she's a great friend.
Wow.
But yeah, so it was, you know, we listened to some songs. We had a nice dinner. You know, one, I will say something interesting. We went to a very fancy restaurant, like a Michelin star restaurant. And I didn't know what to wear because I don't go to places like that. So I dressed up, you know, like I wore like a, I wore a sequined gown, which I was very happy with. But we get there and there's people there that are dressed up, but there's also people that are in like khakis and sneakers. Like this, even fine dining has gotten more casual. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Totally.
But
totally.
The reason I bring this up during the music minute is because the music, I was just expecting, I don't know, like jazz or classical music, but they're playing like Nelly, Backstreet Boys. Like, I was just like, okay, like I really, you totally can wear whatever you want.
That's a vibe, like being in this like high end, you know, restaurant with just, you know,
it was
pop
a vibe.
Music going.
And Lisa, I will say the reason we picked this restaurant, it's called Aterra, Aterra. The reason we picked this restaurant is because they do tasting menus. But, you know, a lot of tasting menus, they also offer wine pairings. And we obviously do not drink alcohol. But Aterra offers what they call a temperance pairing. So we got the full, all of these courses. And each course came with these really fun non-alcoholic drinks. And it was just, it really elevated the experience to, because we didn't feel left out, you know, like you're, if you're not drinking, you are missing out on the full tasting experience. Like, but these guys were like, no, we're going to create a non-alcoholic experience. And it was just fucking cool. It was so great.
I mean, just think about that. It's like,
yeah,
it's unimaginable, and right?
People were asking about our drinks too, because everyone else who had there was one other person who did the NA pairing. Everyone else was either doing glasses of wine or the wine pairings, and the people who were, you know, that wasn't as exciting because there was just literally pouring wine from a bottle, where our drinks were like these really artisanal, handcrafted,
right.
Cocktails, you know, just there was no alcohol, but there was just these, they were really nuanced, flavorful drinks. And people were asking about it. And some people started to actually order those drinks because it was just, it just looks cooler. Like the sommelier really did a good job of making it seem like this is a really cool experience to have these drinks, you know?
That is so cool. And also what I love there is you were probably seeing the people who were doing the wine pairings or that getting like kind of buzz, kind of, you know, probably not experiencing the food in the same way by whatever tasting menu course, by the fourth course of the tasting menu, you know, it just being able to be in that present space to not be, you know, not have your senses in
totally
any way.
Exactly. And that's the thing, was like, even if you do drink, you have to take it easy, or you're not gonna you're paying a lot for these dinners, and if you're not gonna remember it, it's, that kind of sucks. But and there was actually a guy next to us who, he saw all of our drinks, and so he would order one, and then he got, and then he also just got like a glass of wine. But I thought it was really cool that he had like three of the temperance drinks and one glass of wine.
Right.
And like, I thought that was, it was interesting because it just goes to show what we always say. If you give people interesting non-alcoholic options, they'll drink them. Like, even if they still drink alcohol, like he just wanted one glass of wine, but he had three mocktails, you know?
Right. Like, right. That's so cool. That's great. Yeah. That's great. I love it, Tawny. Congratulations. Just all the health and happiness to you guys. You so deserve it. And I'm honored to have been on and continue to be on this journey with the two of you. It's such a gift. in my life. I love you, my friend.
I love you, my potus goddess. I'm so grateful for you. And if you're listening and you're feeling like you want to give up on looking for love or whatever, just stick it out. Don't give up. Something's around the corner. And
if it's not, you'll be okay.
And yeah, you just love your
own
company.
We get no guarantees in life.
Just love your own company.
Life
can
change on a dime. Yeah, life can change on a dime. It is all about being, you know, present and appreciative for where you are now and living it in the moment. So
yes, agreed.
On that note, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.